Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Blowing the Bloom, episode 128. Going to talk some mid-round hitters that are off to very slow starts, and most fantasy players can relate to this. We'll talk some news and more to get you going through, this is, I believe, week five of the fantasy baseball season. You can find me on Twitter at BDNTrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
I'm good, man. Another week, more injuries, and we're going to talk about mid-round struggling bats. So it should be a uplifting episode.
Yes. Of Bubba and the Bloom. We call this therapy. It's going to be therapeutic.
Therapy episode. I like that. Yes.
We're all going to mourn because we're all in similar situations when it comes to fantasy, unless you've just hit. Well, if your hitters are doing good, then your pitchers will probably have four injuries. And so, like, to avoid both sides of the spectrum is very, very difficult, to put it that way.
Yes, it is. A lot of red on a lot of teams, but that's the case for pretty much everyone, except your Towers team.
Yeah, long ways to go, but appreciate it. Long ways to go.
That's my attempt at a jinx there. We'll see.
Yeah, you're trying. Yeah, you're going to help Dr. Roto out, not you probably, but yes, that's the difference of the jinx there. But long ways to go. Let's talk some recent news before we get to the 22 players on said Bloom board. And we're going to start with the Orioles. They only have like 75 prospects that are worthy of calling up in AAA, and they finally called up another one. They already got Colton Kowser up. Moo. They got Jackson Holliday up, who's struggling.
Colton the animal Kowser.
Yes, that's right. You got it. And the Orioles on Tuesday called up Heston Kjerstad, and he got the start in the outfield with Ryan Mountcastle struggles, and then Austin Hayes went to the IL. So what's your thoughts on this one? I guess it comes down to playing time, obviously, but the dude was destroying baseballs at AAA.
Yeah, I don't even know if destroying does it justice. Hit 350, Kjerstad did, 10 homers. Like, it was time.
30 RBIs and 28 runs scored.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that whole AAA, I think, yes. AAA Bowie was just basically a pro team. Holliday was there. Got a couple more guys coming as well. It's just an embarrassment of riches in Baltimore. But that's kind of the problem with Kjerstad. And that's what everyone's going to talk about is, you know, what does the playing time look like? Like, Ryan Mountcastle has been out the last 2 days, so Kjerstad came up, hit eighth in his debut tonight, Tuesday night, struck out three times, went 0-for-4. But even Mountcastle is actually playing first base now as we speak. We're watching the game. And so, like, Mountcastle's essentially not that hurt. So he's in the mix. Ryan O'Hearn's hitting the cover off the ball. You just wonder, like, what I'm going to watch for is Kjerstad going to start against left-handed pitching? I have my doubts. Baltimore is an extreme platoon team. Like, they're not even playing Jackson Holliday against left-handed pitching right now. So kind of why would they with Kjerstad? But let's see what they do. It's just, it's the playing time for me. Fortunately, or maybe unfortunately, we get a few more looks at lineups and that sort of thing before we have to make a fab call in a lot of leagues.
Yes, I agree. It's good we get a week to figure this out. The one caveat I will say is Colton Kowser was in a heavy platoon for about the first 2.5 weeks of the season, and then all of a sudden he started hitting, and now he plays every day, lefties, righties. I think Heston Kjerstad would have a similar role, one would think. But again, it's just tough, like you said. Mountcastle's got the knee issue, but that's a righty-lefty thing. That's essentially a platoon if you play it out that way. So it comes down to, like, does Kjerstad take Bolin's spot? Probably not. Does he take Santander's spot? No. And does Ryan O'Hearn sit? Maybe, but he's like you said, he's crushing it. Like, he's crushing.
That's probably the path is O'Hearn. Like, I know we talked to O'Hearn up a lot, but like, this is a heater. It is Ryan O'Hearn at the end of the day, and will probably cool off. So that's probably the path in terms of just lefty righty split. So we'll see. But I don't know, man. If you had to go today in a 12 team league, what would you bid on Kjerstad in a fab league?
I'd bid like, I'm always bad at this, I'd bid like $78 and probably not get him.
I was thinking I'd probably go like 100 in a 15 teamer and probably not get him.
No, in a 12 team OC, he's probably going 150 to 225. Like, and I say that widely because it's OCs. If you've listened to my Monday bench, Bubba, that is the gap you talk about in OCs. So he's somewhere in that window when you look at him. But talent's there. We'll see how it goes. Another guy getting the call, Matt Mervis. The Cubs called up Matt Mervis from AAA. Garrett Cooper got DFA'd for anybody that cares. It sucks. Love Coop. And he was crushing lefties. He was doing the perfect platoon thing.
We care.
Yeah, no, he was doing the perfect platoon thing. But, you know, there's a point where Matt Bush doesn't need a platoon partner anymore. So let's bring Matt Mervis up to fill the roster spot and get him some at-bats. He went 0-4 on Tuesday night. But at AAA so far this season, Mervis hitting .268 with 5 home runs over 18 games. We saw him crush it in the minors last year. We know what he can do in the minors. He seems to do it in the big. So what's your thoughts on him coming into this weekend probably?
Yeah, that's the problem with Mervis is like very much in danger of being what we call a quad A player, right? Like just can destroy in AAA and it just does not convert. So yeah, like, I mean, Matt Mervis is doing exactly what he did in AAA 2 years ago. He's doing exactly what he did in AAA last year. And so, I mean, I'd rather have him mash in AAA than not. Like, that's a good thing. Yep. But we need to see it against major league pitching. And I don't know. We talk about playing time, but like Mervis is probably just a DH first base against right-handed pitching right now. I don't see him playing against lefties.
Yeah, I was actually tell the Cooper DFA. I was like, this is kind of an interesting one because like at least with Kjærstad, you can kind of see the realm of where it's going to work. I couldn't figure it out for Mervis. I'm like, where does this fit? What, like the whole, they signed Bellinger, Bush is hitting. Like where does this play out in the grand scheme of things? So I guess we'll wait and see on that one.
Yeah.
Tristan Casas. We're still kind of in a partly speculating mode here, but it's typical Red Sox fashion, honestly, to me. They have the MRI, they have results. We're still not getting the full what's going on, except we know it's a rib fracture, which some are taking, it could be up to 12 weeks for a rib fracture. The Red Sox make it sound like this is a pretty serious thing. Like it's going to take some time. For sure a month, I'd imagine, but maybe we're talking 2+ months here. So what's your thoughts here? I know we're still waiting on more information, but by this weekend, even when we talk on Thursday night, we probably have more information. So if you're a Tristan Casas owner and say it is a 2 to 3 month deal, what are we doing?
God, that's tough. You're holding. I think you're holding. But again, I mean, I alluded to this, I think, sometime last week. It's easy to say you're holding all these good guys who are hurt in a vacuum. But how many, you know, how many red X's do you have on your bench right now? And that does it. But Casas, yes, Casas is a hole, at least till we get a little bit more info. It was interesting. Like when it first came out, there was a rib strain.
Yep.
Which, again, I'm not a doctor, but I don't think you can strain a bone. So that was interesting. But then, now we kind of know what it is. Is it Bobby Dalbec time, man?
He's been getting the starts since then.
Scott Gilroy says, as I say that, Bobby says, it's not Bobby Dalbec time. What time is it then?
Yeah,
honestly.
No, I want to see. Like, this is where prospect people will get the upper hand here. I want to see who else do they have available that needs a shot at I'm just looking through their Worcester team here, and it's like I don't see any real first base threats. Let's put it that way. So I'm curious because the Red Sox are still, it's early, they're competing. They can't just sit idle. So that'll be pretty, pretty interesting for sure.
Yeah, and that's actually, I mean, Red Sox, it's actually kind of amazing how good they've been despite injuries
pitching staff pretty
much everywhere. The pitching staff's been awesome, but they've had injuries there too. So, it just sucks for Casas. We're starting to turn things around. I wonder, like, I don't know, we were just talking about Garrett Cooper. Like,
Bobby Dalbec.
Would you entertain that?
What about Brandon Belt? No one signed him.
Yeah, your boy. It's a good call.
I'm not even really talking. I think it's better than Bobby Dalbec, or at least platoon with Bobby. There's a world where it fits.
Bobby Dalbec, and I know you can't really scout stat lines at AAA, but I mean, the dude did hit 33 home runs in AAA last year and less than 500 plate appearances. That's maybe pretty. He stole Mervis. 18 bases. What the hell?
It could be Matt Mervis all over again.
34% strikeout rate in AAA last year for Dalbec. That's not great either. So no, not recommending Dalbec. I'm fantasy wise, just I guess stay away and hope Casas comes back quick as he can.
Yeah. Scott Gilroy says he'd rather have Jose Abreu than Dalbec. So that says quite a bit there. Our buddy Joe Arrico joined us in the chat here. Need to get some second chance leagues going. This isn't out of hand. There are some coming up, so you got that going for you. And then Michael Cicchini joined us right out the gate. The mascot's doing some things tonight. Yes, yes, he is. Yes, yes, the mascot is. It's beautiful to see.
2 for 3 tonight, or 2 for 4. He must have. We launched during mid at bat, and I didn't see what he did, but
we jinxed him. We jinxed him. For all you Ivan Herrera people, it's go time. It's engage. Wilson Contreras appeared to injure himself during his at-bat in the fifth inning, barely jogged down the line on a ground ball. It was removed promptly at the end of the inning. So, yes, we don't know the duration of this, but that definitely sounds at least like an IL stint. Maybe longer. Ivan Herrera, folks.
Probably rostered. I don't know.
He's been getting picked up everywhere. He should be. He's playing at least 4 or 5 games a week already between DH and catcher. Boy's been balling.
Listeners to this show for sure. I think I only have Herrera on like one team, but because it's in Fab and I just haven't had to. But it's been a lot of for me. Herrera and Miguel Amaya. For me, I had Francisco Alvarez go down, so that was my option last week. Actually, Herrera was taken. Amaya was available. I took Amaya. But I'd rather have Herrera. Herrera could be, I don't know, man. Even borderline one catcher leagues out there, he's with everyday playing time, he's there.
Yeah, in OCs, he's 77% rostered. He was started in 69% of leagues this week alone.
Yep.
That's like the even if he's available, this is the time, because the 229 average is a fluky thing. He's got the 3 home runs, 9 RBIs. He's a better hitter than 229. So yeah, enjoy. Get it in while you can. Not rooting for Wilson Contreras to be hurt like this, but if anything, this just gives him even more DH time than catching time, is what this comes down to. So you're welcome. That's it. We have in the chat here, Adam says, I assume Herrera will gain first base eligibility once Goldie is traded up the deadline. It's always a possibility. I think Wilson Contreras will go to first base and Herrera will catch. Let's put it that way. So we'll wait and see there. All right, we'll talk Goldie later as well to really spice things up, folks.
Yeah, speaking of Goldie, yes. We will bury the lead.
Yeah. Cody Bellinger, he left Tuesday night's game after colliding into the wall. Looked like he made the catch. I wasn't watching it live, but interesting stuff there. And then after the game in an interview, his words, it's dull. It's a very dull pain even now, as he has a rib contusion. X-rays are negative. So this is where you said with Costas, like, you know, the whole, you know, sprain thing. Now, this could be, we've heard with the other guys, this could be cartilage around the rib. This could be cartilage between the rib and the sternum. It could just be a serious bruise. There's a million questions. So, Bellinger's day-to-day for now. To let a rib heal, you got to still chill for a few days. Honestly, wouldn't be shocked if he gets a small IL stint just to let it heal, especially the way the Cubs are deep on that roster. But I guess we'll wait and see. Do you have anything else on Cody Bellinger?
No, not really. I mean, if it's something bad, I would guess like Mike Tauchman would slide over from right
field. He went deep tonight.
Twice.
Oh, I missed the second one. Damn.
Double dong.
Double dong talk.
Double taco.
Talk the double dong.
One was an Oppo taco.
Ooh. In Wrigley.
Yeah, I mean, actually Bellinger, like, just to kind of use the opportunity since I don't have him anywhere. Pretty good year, like 4 home runs already, 15 RBI, 6 barrels. That's a 9% barrel rate. He guessed he's only hitting 222, but it's a 219 BABIP, and right around 300 is where he's typically been at. And Bellinger is most importantly holding the strikeout gains from last year. So Bellinger was like an upper 20 strikeout rate guy, went down to 16% last year. So far this year, 15%. So from like a skills perspective, Cody Bellinger hasn't run yet, which is a common theme across all Chicago Cubs. Nico Hoerner got his first stolen base of the year tonight, which I think everyone probably take the under on that, but quietly a pretty decent start to the year for Bellinger. So you hope it's short, man.
Yep. I'm with you there. Real quick for Andrew, Evan Carter is not on the list, but I starred you. We'll get to you later in the show as like a listener question. We'll talk about Evan Carter for you.
Yep.
Scott Gilroy, I'm sorry, but double dong needs to be disposed of. Got to be better expressions. No, not in this world. Let's see. Anything else? No. Okay. Last bit of news. Merrill Kelly.
Oh,
this is not good. I read some quotes here. Oh, man. So first off, he will not need surgery on his teres major strain. That's good. But, okay, here's where the other post game from Lovello says, we're not looking in terms of weeks as we had hoped for. So I think the next step up is a month, more than that. Theo Mackey asked if he thinks Kelly will be back by the All-Star break. Lovello says, I don't know. That's hard to say. Drop.
Yeah, this is like this. And the frustrating thing with this is like we all drafted Merrill Kelly as this kind of volume workhorse guy. And so you can say like, oh, all these dudes throwing 97, 98 are going to get hurt. And, you know, maybe they are. We should go, you know, more the Merrill Kelly route, the volume, the lower velocity, and then look what happens to Merrill Kelly. Yes, Merrill Kelly is. And I'm just kind of trying to look back and see, like, because I obviously the tone of my voice have Merrill Kelly on a few teams.
I sensed a little, yeah.
But like, I mean, this is a dude who over the last three seasons had averaged 30 starts per year, and if you count the postseason, which I like to do in terms of innings pitched. Back-to-back, pretty much back-to-back 200-inning seasons, and then he lasts, three, 4 weeks this year. Just, like, wondering inside my head, like, do I just completely throw pitching injury risks out the window and next year and just take your Tarik Skubal, your Glass now? They get hurt, they get hurt. But are they at any higher risk than Spencer Strider, Merrill Kelly, Garrett Cole? Yada, yada, yada. We have 11 months to talk about that, I guess. But just something that entered my brain today, seeing this Merrill Kelly news.
Well, just reality is going to be Dr. Dave's method. If they throw over like 98 miles an hour, you can't draft him.
But Kelly doesn't.
I know. But, I mean, you said just can't go willy-nilly. Like, they just take off those guys and then cross your fingers. But, yeah, Merrill Kelly is that boring guy that we all thought would be a good SP 2 or 3 and – yeah, he's going to be out. If it really is the All-Star break, folks, that's like middle of July. It's April 23rd right now as we record. That's a ways away. So,
and I'm debating a cut in a 15-teamer. Like, I'm not buying this 1 month. It's more than that. So I may be cutting loose on Merrill.
It's really nice for the D-backs that they did sign Jordan Montgomery now. With E-Rod out, like, yep. D-backs are hurting here. It means – Tommy Henry might get
your boy gets run. Yeah, Tommy Henry gets
Ryan Nelson's on the IL right now too.
Like extended look.
They're getting beat up over there. It's a good thing the Cardinals give them 14 runs a night. Don't have to worry about starting pitching when it comes to that. So Tommy Henry threw tonight, by the way.
He did. And I think Brandon Pfaadt's rotation spot is safe at this point.
Very safe. Very safe. For all the haters out there, it's very safe. Don't you worry about that one. All right. That'll wrap up our news portion of the show. It's Bloom Board time. It's Bloom Board time. So, Ryan, explain what we got going here. It's similar to last week, but we're going to have a lot of therapy here, folks. So, lay down on the couch, get ready to walk through this.
Yeah. Yes. Grab your beverage, drug of choice.
And take a puff, take a pull, whatever you need to do.
Similar exercises last week. Where we looked at mid-round slow-starting pitchers. We're doing the same with mid-round slow-starting hitters. Again, the thing here is like we know which early hitters are struggling, and we're also not doing anything about it because that's the proper thing to do. You're not dropping Julio Rodriguez, who just hit his first home run tonight. So I took, I think, ADP like 70, between 70 and 250. So again, mid-round can be a lot of different things to a lot of different league sizes. So figure I'd take that swath. And then just to put some kind of numbers around this, anyone hitting 240 or below with three or fewer homers plus steals. So that's how we get this list of absolute studs. Had a lot of interaction, comments, et cetera, when I put this out on Twitter. And obviously we're showing this on the live stream. As basically people making jokes that this is their roster in the middle round. So apologies for that. I did add on the board here, color-coded skills, strikeout rate, barrel rate, and stolen base attempt rate, just to get a proxy. We do those same three skills on our Thursday night episode with the Fab preview for CBS risers, doing the same here with K-rate, barrel rate, so we and stolen bases, so we can get at you know, some kind of proxy for how the skills have looked thus far. But man, it's a doozy of a list.
Yes, it is. And it kind of makes me feel better when we did our round by round type stuff breakdowns. And we said, this is where we usually take a lot of our starting pitchers because of the way things went. So I still have some of these guys. I'm not going to say I missed this world, but not as heavy as like literally some people say, like 8 of these guys are on their roster and stuff. Like that stings. That stings in a big way. But I think we're going to try to go through most of them here because we have time to do so. So we're going to start Nolan Jones, .43, homer, 2 steals. He got his first hit tonight in like 7 or 8 games. It's been brutal. Yeah. And then he leaves in the 7th inning with
with a back injury. So.
Back injury, yeah. He apparently has been bugging him most of the season, which is good to know, and it locked up on him in the 7th inning. So he's going to miss a few games, they said. And maybe that's what he needs to get his head right. I don't know. I still think the guy's talented. I think there's still some positive signs for Nolan Jones, like a .229 BABIP, that ain't it type stuff. But there's also a lot of like, oh, man, this ain't looking pretty when all things are said and done. So what are you seeing when you look at Nolan Jones?
I mean, I wasn't a big Nolan Jones fan, and trust me, I have a few of these guys we'll talk about later on down the line here. For me, it was the plate approach and the K rate for Nolan Jones that kind of had me off. The K rate's gone from 30% last year up to 38% last year. So yes, like Nolan Jones is hitting .143, and some of it is that .229 BABIP that you mentioned. The BABIP was .400 last year, which is just bonkers. But a 38% strikeout rate is no bueno, and that basically affects everything. We've also seen the power go away. 2 barrels and 92 plate appearances for Nolan Jones is running, so there is that, but not getting on base. And as we've seen time and time again and talked about time and time again this year, the lineup around Nolan Jones is pretty dicey, though they did touch up, I believe, Michael King
this evening. Yep.
So, in general, like I'm not sure if we're doing like level of worry drop or whatever, but I'm worried about Nolan Jones. I think the plate approach rules all, and this is kind of the first real season, the real sophomore season. I know Nolan Jones had 94 plate appearances in the majors in 2022, but this is the time where teams have had an offseason to get a book on him. They're seeing Nolan Jones for the 3rd or 4th time or whatever. And I think exposing some pretty big holes in Nolan Jones's plate approach. So,
yeah, it's not good. It's not good at all. Like I didn't have nearly as many shares as I had last year of Jones. And it's concerning. I think the good thing is he should have as much run as he needs to figure it out or not figure it out.
So yes.
That's good. It's good and bad, because if he continues to struggle and you keep putting him out there, that's no bueno. But at the same time, he's going to get every chance to get it right. So that's a plus. To let it warm up in Colorado takes a couple weeks.
That will help. It's a good point. Colorado is a very HQ did a study on this, like monthly park factors a ways back. And Colorado, just because the temperatures, I mean, it snowed there like 3 days ago and they played.
Yep.
Once Denver gets to 90 degree plus, it's a hitter's paradise.
Hitter's paradise. So we'll wait and see on Jones, but slight concern for sure, maybe major concern, depending on which angle you look at here. Gleyber Torres, my goodness. I want to thank listeners for being in my leagues, because you prevented me from getting Gleyber Torres, who I do really like.
This is one I liked. Yes.
I would have had many more shares if I could, but you guys didn't let me. So I guess thank you. .93, no homers, 3 steals. I was running down his player page on Fangraphs when you were talking about Jones, and it's not good because a lot of things resemble previous seasons. That's what scares me when I see this. And even like, you know, again, X stats aren't the end all be all, but they're not saying he's getting super unlucky here when you look at Gleyber Torres. So what do you see when you look at Gleyber Torres? Cause I am not over the moon with what's taking place right now.
I mean, it's a collapse. It's a skills collapse. The strikeout rate's almost doubled from last year. Gleyber Torres has his Nolan Jonesian number of barrels, 2 barrels and 98 plate appearances, which is equally bad. We do have Michael Cecchini in the chat saying Gleyber was hit on the hand in light game 2, so early in the season, has to be affecting him. So there's always, and with these guys where there's just a total skills collapse, I think I'm writing this column next week at Baseball HQ. There's always this kind of
injuries.
hidden injury thing that you're thinking about. And if there are times where someone got hit, left a game, whatever, it's funny. Like, I think it's right after the season, like the week after the season ends, everyone's like, oh yeah, I was hurt in April and just played through it. And now I'm having surgery. Not saying that's the case with Gleyber Torres, but wouldn't,
or they show up at spring training and said, hey, I had surgery in November.
Yeah.
Didn't even tell us.
Well, we've drafted six times. Yes,
exactly. Like, thanks, dude. Appreciate
six, maybe 12, maybe 2, 3. I don't know.
Depends on your issues.
So, I mean, to kind of wrap up Gleyber Torres, on the plus side, this is only 100 plate appearances. Gleyber Torres has a track record of basically being a 25-10 guy in 2022 and 2023. He's not old. Like, I you have to think track record wise, if he's healthy, this turns around and turns around, I would say, rather quickly. So I'm actually a buy low on Gleyber Torres, but that's probably also because I was in on him in draft season. So
yeah, little biasy involved there for sure. But yeah,
that's the thing though. Like, if you were in on someone in draft season, how much should that change?
Well, it shouldn't.
After 98 plate appearances,
it should not. It should not. I'm with you on that one. That's why, like, Alex Bregman, he's hitting .213, no homers, one steal. But, like, you look at the plate skills, 11 to 12% walk, 11 to 12% K, doing what we do. Barrel rate's at 3%. Last year was 5%. Hard hit rate's about in line with last year. I'm not worried about him. Slow starter, great offense, as long as he's healthy. He still hits fourth in Houston. I'm fine with Alex Bregman.
Yep. Agreed. Not worried. Plate skills look fine. Yes, a little bit of power degradation from Alex Bregman, obviously with zero home runs, but just the two barrels. But Alex Bregman isn't really a barrel guy. As we figured out, he learns how to hit these non-barreled home runs. I'm not worried about Alex Bregman. It is interesting just how bad he's kind of been a microcosm for the Astros this year. It is crazy how bad the Astros are. I don't know their record off the top of my head, but I know they're over 10 games below 500.
Yeah, that's not what I think we drew up when the season started, let's put it that way, with Houston. So
still a great lineup, though. It'll be fine. Bregman will be fine.
The pitching has been horrific for them. Bregman will be just fine. Here's a fun one. Goldie, Paul Goldschmidt, hitting .195, two homers, no steals, and he even went 0-for-4 on Tuesday with three more strikeouts, striking out 30% of the time now on the season. Paul Goldschmidt hit .186 after tonight's games, and there's not a lot of optimism in my world. A 2% barrel rate, Bloomfield, 2%, a 30% hard hit rate. Father Time, it's a hell of a drug.
Yeah, Paul Goldschmidt, we might want to call him. That is something I do look at with the age. I mean, I am much more, if I see a skills collapse out of a 36-year-old, which Goldschmidt is, I'm a little bit more concerned than if I see the same thing with, you know, a 30-year-old Alex Bregman. Father Time always wins. Sometimes it comes, you know, quicker than others. So yes, like, nothing looks good for Paul Goldschmidt at all. Like, you can't really look at anything that he has done this year with any type of positivity. He has one barrel, 96 plate appearances. Glass half full. I forget when this was. And it was Goldschmidt himself, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, had an equally bad start, like through Memorial Day, and then came back and was Paul Goldschmidt again. So, you know, does that happen again? I don't know. Again, we are 2 years now removed from that. So it's harder and harder to buy into a rebound when you are getting up there in your older 30s. Just ask Jose Abreu.
I was about to say, does he pull in Abreu from last year? Because I don't think Abreu is pulling it back again this year, but we were putting Abreu out, you know, to slaughter last year.
And then he did come back. Yep.
Yeah. His final stat line got us kind of at least quasi-optimistic on where things went. We got a Cardinals fan here. Bobo Beyond says, Marmol says Contreras is fine, felt the sting in his bruised hand, and the score dictated. Okay, the bruised hand, why couldn't he run to first base? That's what I want to know. That's where I'm confused. So we'll see. Regardless, Ivan Herrera season, folks. It's just, you know, if Herrera's banged up, it's going to keep happening. That's my 2 cents. But yeah, Goldie, Dunzo for me, but you never know. Still early. We'll see, but I'd be very concerned. Christian Encarnacion Strand, I am not concerned. Couple things here. Strikeout rate, almost in line with last season. I know he's only hitting .190. The BABIP's almost 100 points lower. That would slightly concern me with CES, but the barrel rate's better than last year. Hard hit rate's still not bad. His max EV is almost 2 miles an hour better than last year. It's just the ground ball rate's freaking almost 10% higher. So a couple minor adjustments. I think CES enjoys a very hot and humid summer in Great American Small Park.
Yeah, early candidate to be homer to barrel bloom board for Encarnacion Strand. Two homers on 7 barrels in that ballpark. It's kind of tough to do. So from a power aspect, yes, I do. I worry a little bit or a lot of bit about the plate approach, man. He's got one walk.
Yeah,
it's a fair. 30% K rate and a 15% swinging strike, which league average on that is like 11, maybe 12%. He's whiffing a lot. He's not walking. Like, I think that's the type of plate approach, especially given Encarnacion Strand's lack of MLB experience. I feel like he could get eaten up at the plate. So yes, the power is fine. I think the homers are still going to be there, but I think for CES, like a low 200s batting average is also in play, and that's going to hurt.
That will, but if he can go hit 30 home runs, that'll help too. So
Would you take the over under 260? Well, most projections have CES like 255 batting average rest of season,
which would be awesome. 255 with
take the under. What,
you want under? Okay, I'll take. I like 255. I'll live with that. Nick Castellanos. A lot of people are nervous on this one, and rightfully so. It's been a rough going 0-for-4 on Tuesday, but you know, 193 average, no homers, no steals, 30% K rate. All very, very concerning when it comes to Casty. And I don't know. I look at some other things when it comes to Castellanos and talk about another guy that the barrel rate's just struggling. So what's your thoughts on Casty?
Yeah, speaking of bad plate approaches, we transitioned from Encarnacion Strand to Castellanos.
He went full Javi Baez the other night on one.
He did. And I've actually seen some I should look into it more. I have seen some comps and studies on how these types of plate approaches age, and spoiler alert, they don't age well. Speaking of Javi Baez, so that for me is a little bit of a red flag with Nick Castellanos. You can say, sure, the track record is there for Castellanos, and it is, but there's also a track record of the 2022 season where Casty hit 13 home runs in 558 plate appearances and hit .263. So like that's certainly in play as well. So I'm kind of punting on this one. Like I don't know. This is a guy who has been awesome in 2021 and 23, despite the bad plate approach. I don't know. I don't know what to do with him. I lean towards being scared that this doesn't turn around if I had to pick one, but I could totally see him go off too.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards it doesn't happen, but I agree. Like in that lineup, that ballpark, anything can happen, especially when it's like at first I see the no barrels and stuff. I always go straight to, well, he's getting more balls on the ground. He's hitting like almost 10% less, and he's flying out 10% more, which means he's actually getting under it too much is what it comes down to not barrel a baseball essentially, or he's just not hitting it hard, one of the two. So his holes, and that could be because of the plate approach. He's like probably just off the end of the bat outside pitches and doing different things and not squaring up good pitches.
Did you see the video? Or it was just like a gif of him, one of his swings. The ball was literally over his bird's eye view above the plate, and the ball literally was in the other batter's box.
That's what I was saying. He went full Javi Baez. He went full Javi on that one. It's pretty impressive. I feel like Pitching Ninja did that one, like as a reverse hitting pitching thing. It was pretty good. Pretty good stuff.
Adam says Castellanos is a drop, assuming he puts up a 2022 season. So yeah, I'm sticking it out longer myself just to see, but
well, because most of these guys where you drafted them, I'm usually the old standards Memorial Day. Some could be before that when you see some very glaring situations. Like I get that, but for the most part, I'm waiting at least a few more weeks before I start pulling pins on this one, because all these guys have that pedigree that the reason you did draft them. So it could literally be a slow start, and then you go crying after you dropped him, and that would suck. So, like, you're not keeping them all.
CJ Abrams last year.
Totally. Totally. We've seen it with a lot. I tell the story forever. Like, I dropped Matt Carpenter the year he decided to hit, you know, become an MVP for 4 months. That sucked in a big, big way. So, and you got to make ad drops. That's just the way it goes. You're never going to get them all right. That's just the way the game. But, like, you got at least certain players deserve a little more time. Let's be real about it. Tyro, my dog, my boy, and this is a fun one for me. He's hit 222 entering Tuesday with 3 home runs, 26% K rate. But I'm going to throw a little nugget out there for everybody. He picked a couple more hits on Tuesday. So over the last 12 games, hitting well over 300 with 7 extra base hits, a couple home runs, no steals, badly enough. But he's definitely waking up at the plate. I am not concerned with Tyro Estrada. This is who he is. And I'd like him to steal some more bags. That's where it comes down to. But, you know, he used to be a leadoff guy. Now he's hitting 6th and 7th, and I don't know if that's affecting him. Not to mention the Giants' offense just has been stinking up the joint, so he doesn't get on and get a whole lot of chances to do much to begin with. But I'm not concerned about Thyro. What about you?
It's not even the no steal. So agreed, I'm not concerned about the batting average and homers. I'm a little worried. It's not even the no steals. It's no steal attempts. He hasn't even tried. And so, like, yeah, I mean, is that a team thing with the Giants? Is that just where he's at? Like you were saying, in the lower in the order, they're not hitting well as a team. But you think if they're not hitting well as a team, like, you try and spark things. I'm at least a little worried that he hasn't even tried to steal a base yet.
Yeah, that is very fair. Like, I'm pulling this up right now.
He's not a stolen base only guy, but Estrada. Back-to-back 20 stolen base seasons. Still think that's like in play, but I don't know, man.
Well, entering Tuesday, the Giants are 24th out of 30 teams in steals with 11 steals on the season. But they're just not running, period, it looks like.
New manager, right?
Yeah, Bobby Melvin.
So, I don't know.
That's a bummer, because I was hoping they'd run. So maybe that'll change. Maybe they'll have to change to keep the offense moving. But that's probably part of it, like I said. And also, there's just – not a lot going on in that offense, especially the bottom part of it. So we'll see. We'll see. But not worried about him overall. He might – the old Geloff versus Estrada thing with the lack of production hitting.
Oh, God. Order,
that might get real interesting now. Let's throw it. Except the big argument was Geloff won't have the run production factor in Oakland. Well, we're kind of – it's getting interesting now. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, that's we may not even discuss that bet ever again.
Yep.
Keeps going this way.
Yep, Spencer Torkelson. This is an interesting one. Hitting 231 on the season for Torque. No homers, no steals. You don't expect steals, though. 19% K rate, which is promising. Very promising. 3% barrel rate. I believe he got his first barrel like Monday or Sunday. He's got 2 on the season now. It's been a slow burn to get Torkelson going here. What's your thoughts on Torque, who needs to pick things up quickly?
Yeah, it's kind of weird that this looks like a change of approach. I mean, he's actually striking out like quite a bit less than he did last year. The K rate going from 25% down to 19, which is actually pretty good, but not when you have 2 barrels the entire season. So I wonder too, like, Detroit's just played in a lot of just nasty, nasty weather games in April. And I mean, I guess that's going to be a thing. And we even saw this with Torque last year where it was the slow start and then he just took off. So hate to be kind of saying the same thing with a lot of these guys, but if you drafted Torque, you're riding it out for sure. But I think he rebounds once things start to warm up, just like he did last year.
Yeah. I think there's definitely some streaks coming his way. Power will regain form, but like you said, the approach is weird. Seeing the strikeout rates change so much, it makes you wonder, like, what are we doing, kid? Like, you were doing just fine. What are we tweaking?
Yeah, you kind of don't want, like, I'm fine with Torque striking out 25% of the time, which really isn't even that much.
It's when your
hard hit rate goes from 40% down to 19%.
Yes.
You can strike out a little bit more and focus on hitting the ball harder. So
it like makes me wonder, instead of like taking the pitch on the corner for a strike 3, is he swinging at the one that's like a couple more inches off the plate, thinking it's strike 3, and now he's grounding out and not doing things? And again, I don't watch enough Tigers to pay attention, but that's what it kind of feels like right now. Yandy Diaz. Whew. draft Yandy Diaz if you want batting average help. Draft, no, he's hit 222 with one home run, no stolen bases. Only 16% K rate, so he's got that going for him. But if he's not hitting for average, this is close to the first guy where I'm like, 10 and 12 team leagues, this could be a drop situation.
Yeah, maybe, just because, I mean, that's the kind of the only thing he does. It's kind of funny, the juxtaposition of Yandy Diaz right now versus where he was this time last year. Remember, he went on that like home run binge in April, and there was this launch angle revolution and that sort of thing. He was lifting the ball and then turned back into Yandy Diaz. And actually now it's a 60. So Yandy Diaz was always a ground ball hitter. And from 21 to 23, it was a 52%, 50%, 52% ground ball rate. Pretty extreme. Dude's at a 63% ground ball rate right now. So like I wouldn't be surprised if it's single digit home runs from Yandy Diaz, but I do think the batting average, like, this is a lot of this is BABIP, man. He's still making a ton of contact, and you hit all those ground balls, like ground balls outside of obviously line drives, like they will find holes. A 256 BABIP for someone who has pretty much lived in the like 340, 350 area. I think Yandy Diaz goes right back to being like a 280, 290 hitter the rest of the way. I just don't know. I don't know what that home run total looks like when you're hitting 63% of your ground balls in the ground or balls.
Yeah, it's just like the bad X rest of the season has been 275. Okay, that's good. 15 homers, 63 runs, 62 RBIs. Like, is that enough? Like, if there's, I don't know who's out there to go for, but I think that's the high end of things with 15, 63, and 62 also.
Yeah. Yep.
So that's where like the drop situation leads to the conversation for me. Depends on who's out there, but 10 and 12 team leagues, at least 10s, you might have something worth talking about. Yep. Riley Green, a 231, three homers, no steals, 26% K rate. Does have that 15% barrel rate, which gives me some optimism because all draft season I was concerned about his shoulder still being an issue. We have another Detroit Tiger, by the way, we're talking about here. So there might be a theme when it comes to Tigers bats. You know, I don't know if Parker Meadows is on the list. I don't know if he went later in drafts.
He wasn't drafted high enough to make this list. Yeah,
but
he would be.
Yes, he would be. So this is another one of those. And you look at Riley Green, and he had like a good week there, and then it's kind of disappeared again. But the fact I see the barrel rate, I see the hard hit rate, I definitely have some optimism with Green, but still a very ground ball heavy profile.
Yep, which was kind of always the case with Green. And I was a little bit off of Green because I don't know what the like I think he's kind of a four category guy, has not attempted a stolen base this year as well. But you're right, like the shoulder was probably the biggest concern, and that's not as much of a concern now for me given the eight barrels that he has, 98 plate appearances. That's pretty good. And the K rate and the plate skills, actually a major jump in walk rate. So the OBP is probably pretty decent, which again, you'd hope he runs, but has not yet. I think Riley Green is going to be fine. And again, he only like barely makes this cut because he's hitting 230 with three homers. Like, that's not awful. And I think he hit his fourth tonight. So he may graduate from this list.
Yeah. Well, he hit two today, according to Michael Cicchini in the chat. Hit
two.
Yes, he double donged it. So you got that going for you.
As Scott now leaves the chat.
Yeah, sorry, Scott. This is what you get with me. I'm a petulant child. It's okay. Henry Davis, let's draft this guy as a third catcher because eventually we can drop a guy because he will be our new catcher.
That was me in a couple leagues.
That was a lot of smart people in leagues. I was not one of them. I was not interested. Well, I had one share, and it was in the league that Curlin had a draft for me because I had an incident take place that evening. And let's say Henry Davis, that's a 15-team online championship auction. He's not on my team anymore. He's hitting 172, no home runs, 31% K rate, and he's sharing catching duties with one Joseph Bart. So, for me, like, you can say what you wish here, and you might be right. I have no need for Davis on my roster.
You just blaming Curlin for your problems?
No, I'm just saying it's the one team I got because he, like you, I said you guys were smart for it. I understood it. He had the same philosophy.
The problem is, like, Yeah, he got that catcher eligibility that we were all worried about. You know, it was like they signed Yasmani Grandal, and it was like, oh no, Henry Davis may not get catcher eligible until May or June, and he got it by like April 16th or 17th. The problem is, yeah, 172. No homers, no steals, basically no barrels and striking out a third of the time. I think Henry Davis, honestly, in a 15-team league is a cut. Like, I mean, if you have Miguel Amaya available, obviously if you have Ivan Herrera available, like there are better options that you can stream. It's like, it's not like if you cut Henry Davis, like someone's going to bid a ton on him the next week unless he just goes off. So like you can get him back, stream him. But I think Henry Davis has entered that second catcher streaming territory, yep. Which is maybe a little harsh, maybe overreactive, but we've seen nothing from him.
Connor Wong, I would take over him. Another name that's out there probably.
Yep.
So there's a few of them. You know, Rene Pinto is out producing him. Just throw that one in the back of your minds. And I'm not saying go and roster the Pinto, but I'm just saying he's playing better than Henry Davis right now. So says everything you need to know. Ian Happ, this isn't good because all offseason it's like we kept debating, not that he wasn't going to be good. Was it going to be power or was it going to be average? Well, right now, Bloomfield, it's neither. Yeah. So 240 average, one homer, but only 22% K rate, 9% barrel rate, the quality of contact, the batted ball profile, some similarities there. So I feel like Hap's going to be okay. I'm not overly worried just yet, but definitely worth monitoring.
Yeah, no power, no speed, and also no steals and no stolen base attempts because he is part of the stagnant Chicago Cubs.
Yes.
I'm not that worried about Hap. The only thing is this hamstring. Like, I wonder if that's kind of lurking. Ian Hap, I remember drafting him in Tout Wars in March. And right after I did that, you told me he had a bad hamstring, which made me feel really good about the pick. Yep. But he was not a shoo-in to make the opening day or to make opening day. The hamstring was that bad. And then it flared back up again like this past week. So you just wonder if that is hindering Ian Happ at all. Other than that, I'm not super worried about Ian Happ. Track record's there. He should be fine unless this hamstring is worse than we think.
Yeah, he's still going to play every day, so not a lot of concerns there with
him. And yes, playing time.
Yep, he's good to go. Now this one's interesting. James Outman. We saw peaks and valleys last year. Ended up with the good numbers, but this year it's been pretty much a valley. .197, two home runs. He had a pinch hit double on Tuesday night. He's not playing every day. Andy Páez was called up. He's playing every day in center field. Outman was the guy to be the center fielder. Gonna have to kind of play this one by ear, but 10 teams, probably a drop. 12 teams, I'd still try to hold, but I get it if you drop him at this point in time. Like he's viable. So what are your thoughts here?
Like, I don't even know if Outman's playing enough to make it. I mean, everyone we've talked about so far, I think, has been an everyday player. This is our first platoon guy. Might have that wrong, but I think that's right.
No, it's just him and Henry Davis. That's it.
Yeah. And Henry Davis, like, I don't really count that platoon because you're a catcher. You don't play every day anyway. So, like, with Outman, that the playing time cap is already low, and it definitely seems like the Dodgers are exploring other options here. So I'm with you, maybe holding a 12, but I'd be very close to dropping James Outman. Just we have not seen much. He strikes out a ton anyway, so it's really all about the power for Outman. 3 barrels so far in 75 plate appearances. Not great.
You mean the power is Outman?
Can we move on? That's worse than my old Schmidt.
I was going to say a power outage, man, but fixed it up for you.
You could have just gone with option C, which would be neither.
Jaime Candelario, the candy man. He's hitting .197, 2 home runs, no stolen bases on the year, 29% K rate. I'm bummed because I liked the candy man. I know he's battling injuries. Like he hurt his elbow and just kept playing. Hyperextended his elbow. Didn't miss much time at all. Like nothing, which is crazy. Again, same with CES. It's going to warm up the Great American. I like my options there. but coming off a career year, he's reverting back to some of the habits from previous seasons. So I think he's going to be okay, but he might not see last year at the same time.
Yeah, and the playing time is, I think, pretty safe just because the Reds have been kind of gluttoned by injury. Yeah, you're right. Like, there is really just a one-year track record with Candelaria, although he was decent in 2021.
He's been good, but last year was the career year.
Yes, last year was the career year. And, I mean, we knew that. We knew that coming into the season. It was just the added excitement going to Small Park, being in that lineup, yada, yada. So, I don't know. I think Candelaria will get enough run to see this through. I just don't know. Like, again, last year is not in play. Needs to cut down the K's that has jumped up from 22% up to 29%. And when you have that uptick in strikeouts with just two barrels on the season, like, it's been really bad. 18% hard hit rate for Mr. Candelario as well, and barely running. I know he's not a huge runner, but it's still 8 bases last year. So I don't know, mildly concerned, but I think you ride it out.
Yep, I'm with you on that one. Mr. Byron Buxton hit his first home run of the season on Tuesday night, so he's on the board. Buxton is on the board, but coming into Tuesday, 217 with no homers, no steals, but he picked up that home run, like I said, tonight, 34% K rate, which is obviously not great at all, but he's been over 30% the previous two seasons, so yes, kind of got that going for us. I don't know. Like, the quality of contact, you'd hope for more power. I think it's still going to come. It's cold in Minnesota. He's also playing center field every day, which might change his outlook on life. So Buxton, just, you hold and pray, but I don't know what your thoughts here.
I don't know. I still don't really know what you're getting with Buxton, because I don't think he's going to run. He has not attempted a stolen base all season. He doesn't walk, or hasn't walked this year. The K's are through the roof. Yes, there's some power. Again, it hasn't been there this season yet. I'll give you the power of the last few years, but, like, what does that add up to? I mean, like a 220 bat with 30 home runs and a handful of steals, like, if he stays healthy. So, and he's, well, no, he's not UT only. Sorry, he is playing center field, like you said. So you can kind of put him in outfield, but, like, I don't know. I've always had this thing with Byron Buxton the last few years. Like, he actually hasn't, it's not like a, I'm trying to think of, like, a Royce Lewis.
Yeah.
Where, like, you know he's going to produce when he's on the field. Like, I don't think, I mean, Byron Buxton hasn't been a good fantasy production guy, even on a per plate appearance basis, for a long time. So,
I don't know. Is that you saying you drop Byron Buxton?
Yeah, I would. I mean, I would not have him on my team in the first place.
Yeah, but, neither would I.
But I don't know. It's hard to drop him, I guess, if you believe in him, but be real close.
Like, would you take Sal Frelick
over Buxton?
Yes.
Yes.
Blake Perkins, same team.
So basically that's replacement level, because you're streaming him. I'd hold on to Buxton, I guess. God, that's close though.
If Bellinger misses time, would you take Mike Tauchman?
Cool.
The fact you have to think about that says a lot right there.
Of where I'd Buxton. Go Buxton, but yeah, you're right. I have to think about it.
Yeah, so there might be options out there in your waiver wire, is the point of that little exercise there, folks. So go check that out. Sedane Rafaela, this one's a big bummer. Love Sedane. Hitting .162 with a home run and two steals, 26% K rate. Let off on Tuesday night, put up an offer there as well. But, man, it's been a rough go. I do like seeing the barrel rate at 7%, which is great compared to last season. But, man, like, he needs to turn things around real quickly. And I'm slightly concerned, but I'm playing him pretty much religiously. So what about you?
Yeah, I mean, we just don't have the we don't really know. Like, we don't know how low this ceiling or this floor can go for Rafaela. Like, obviously the Red Sox believe in him, just gave him the contract. And I think that extends his playing time leash, which is also great, but, like, have not really seen anything from him in the majors, like, at all. So I'm worried, but I'm holding just because this is a 23-year-old that the team obviously believes in and is going to play. So, like, if I can, I'm benching Rafaela, and that's what I have been doing in 15 team leagues. I'm not starting him. and just kind of waiting this out, because I think there is, like, unlike Buxton, I think there is a ceiling, or unlike Candelario, Outman, even like Ian Happ, definitely Henry Davis, there's a ceiling here that those guys don't have.
Yep. The benching I get, I can't drop Rafaela just yet, because there is a power speed guy there. If they somehow decide, like, hey, let's see what he's got, let him lead off, and he starts figuring it out, like, Jaren Duran's going to lead off. I'm not crazy there, but if somehow even Rafaela hits second, that'd be pretty sweet in that lineup, but time will tell. A couple more here. Jonathan India, it's been a rough start besides injuries and more, but he keeps playing because Matt McClain's out and whatnot. India, 174, no homers. He sat the first 2 days of this week due to his injury. But, he's not hitting the ball hard. Let's put it that way. It's the nicest way I can say it. But he's still, doing Jonathan India things. Just doesn't look great. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, you just kind of wonder, like, you want Jonathan, like, you kind of know he's going to get hurt. So you figured while he's healthy, you will hopefully get some production out of him. And that hasn't been the case. Health aside, the skills have been fine, I think. The K rate is right where it's been throughout, right around 20-21%, which is awesome. He barely swings and misses. The low batting average is mostly BABIP driven. The BABIP the last 4 years, 326, 305, 281, which if you average that all out, it's about league average, 226 this year. Has actually swiped a couple bags, which again, from a health standpoint, makes me feel pretty good. So, no, the power hasn't been there, but really like the park, and India is playing, and he's at least for now healthy. So I'd probably keep him in and hope this turns around quickly.
Brandon Drury has been banged up from time to time this season, hitting below 200 with one home run, no steals. There's a lot of concerns here, but I guess if he's playing, you keep holding, but I could see a world – and especially 10s, maybe even 12s, where he's at least close to the chopping block.
Yeah, wait on second base and get Brandon Drury, I said, in all draft season. Get that sweet corner middle dual eligibility where he can hurt your team in multiple different ways. It's been really rough for Brandon Drury. There has been a hamstring injury, so like I wonder, A, if that's nagging or had affected what Drury was doing in April. Plate skills look fine. Power's down. I'm holding, but it's tough to hold.
Yep, I'm with you. Speaking of waiting on second base, Jorge Polanco.
Yeah, here's another gem.
173. At least he's got the three home runs to go with it. But overall, like, this dude, if someone pops up and like Amed Rosario, I'll play Kim over Jorge Polanco right now.
Agreed. And we are getting to the point of the draft, the ADP now, where this is outside the top 200 and you can be a little bit more aggressive here with, like Amed Rosario, Jose Caballero, this guy going super late who I would now take over Polanco, Drury. The thing with Polanco has always been hurt and he's kind of old too. So like that doesn't bode well for a turnaround either.
Nope, not at all. Captain Jack, guy I liked quite a bit this year.
Yeah, your boy.
Buck 83, two homers, one stolen base, and he platoons a lot. I like him. He's going to be hot, but he might be more for a streaming guy, like when you see a good schedule for the Pirates. Otherwise, he's probably left for the waiver wire for me.
I don't know, man. It's a good number of – there's a little bit of green in the skills. Like the K rate is striking out a lot less, and that was the thing with Sawinski was like
– Yeah, so is Torkelson.
Yeah, it's true. No, that's true. Sawinski – and I don't know if this is a trait of him, but in the past, it's been a roller coaster. He's had months where he's one of the best players in baseball and then entire months where he's been one of the worst players in baseball. And it just kind of happens which month we're talking about. So there is that, I guess, hope for a heater that he has shown the ability to go up and down and be this down before and rebound from it, just from a mental aspect of the game. I think that's important. But yeah, it's tough times right now. You mentioned the playing time and against lefties. Like, I don't know. It's probably a cut for me in most leagues.
Yeah, that's the problem. Like, I love Captain Jack. Most of my shares are in best ball for those hot and cold times we talked about. That's what he's there for.
Yes.
But I think I dropped him in at least one fab league last week, and he's he's there. I know I'll want to pick him up at some point this year, but it's tough because I agree the peripherals look great. There's just smart people tweeting about this, that, and the other with Captain Jack, but you still got to produce at some point. You got to play. That's the biggest thing. He's just not playing.
Yep.
Anthony Rizzo. Wait on first base, they say. Take Anthony Rizzo, they say. Hit 227, one homer, no steals. I dropped him anywhere I could this past week.
Did you?
I still have shares because I couldn't drop him everywhere, but he's on the way out for me.
Well, damn, man. We had loyal listener Ben Tidd in the flesh tonight at Yankee Stadium. Yep. And starting that turnaround on Rizzo, who homered on Tuesday night. So turnaround begins, thanks to Ben.
Well, at least the few shares I still have, maybe will flourish. Thank you, Ben Tidd.
I held in my 15s. I know you mostly played 12s on your family.
Yeah, it was 12s that he left you.
That makes sense. He was our Gene Segura all-star, who's doing nothing and still in your lineup. But he did do something tonight, so there is that. We'll see. I'm holding in 15s, like I said, on my own team. So,
curious to your thoughts on this. Where I was dropping him was for Nathaniel Lowe. Would you do the same?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
I would.
Okay. That was why I did it. It wasn't like I was just taking some willy-nilly guy. It's like, Nathaniel Lowe's available. Rizzo, you're out. Like, done. So that was the scenario. Like Abreu, he's not on the list. Get rid of Abreu. Now he's broken. Like, dead to the world.
What about Rizzo versus other first baseman we have talked about? Well, we haven't really talked about that many. Yanni Torque. Diaz and Torque.
I probably still like Rizzo over Diaz, as bad as that sounds. I've never been a Yandy Diaz guy.
Yeah, I don't draft first baseman around here.
I don't draft ground ball hitters. I guess that's not my goal. I want chicks take the long ball. It's kind of the way the world works.
Yeah.
Here's a first baseman you can drop too. Andrew Vaughn hitting .158 with no homers, no steals, and on a team that might not score more than like 4 runs a week. So I don't know. You might have more on Andrew Vaughn, but I'll keep that one simple from my viewpoint. He's not going to cut it.
Agreed. Just hasn't done anything this year, and I don't know. Was kind of off him entering the year. This was the calling my shot, the Gene Segura Award question that prompted the question, which was Andrew Vaughn. Just kind of someone in your lineup doing nothing, and yeah, I think you gotta move on there.
Yep, you gotta bounce on that one. All right, final thoughts from the board before we move on to listener questions, Bloomfield. What are we thinking?
Let's move on to listener questions. We've got a good amount, so
yes, we do. Let's rock and roll with those, and we will start with the question in the chat here. Andrew, I'm not going to attempt to butcher your last name. I apologize. He says Evan Carter on the list of topics tonight, please. Basically, Evan Carter. Let's see what Evan Carter's up to.
So barely missed the list because he has 3 homers and 1 steal. But hitting .211. So, like, again, that's the problem with little arbitrary filters or whatever. Actually, some decent signs from Evan Carter. Yeah. And I was not an Evan Carter fan entering the season. Walking less, which that sounds bad, but in batting average fantasy leagues, that's what I want. I want to see a more aggressive Evan Carter and making a lot more contact. The K rate for Carter has dropped from 32% last year in the majors down to 20%. It's a huge improvement with a little bit less swing and miss. It's been a .231 BABIP for Evan Carter. That is god awful. And when I say god awful, like, probably poor luck on his batted balls. So I think Evan Carter, I think there's, and then you, I mean, haven't even talked about the prospect pedigree, all that, like, he could kind of go off at any time in a good lineup. I'm actually, it's somewhat weird. I'm sure I'm higher on Evan Carter now versus the market than I was a month ago.
Yeah. Yeah. He needs to get like the barrel rate and the hard hit rate back up to where it was last year. Cause if we can do that with the discipline you're talking about, that'd be tremendous. But that offense is going to be just fine. So he's going to get his chances. And at first it was like, they're going to call guys up. How does that affect Carter? Well, they keep playing him every day in the same spot in the order. I'm like, hey, when Wyatt Langford's the problem, not Evan Carter, we're good. So keep putting Evan Carter out there. You'll be just fine in the end, I think.
I do want to see his platoon splits against lefty so far. It probably doesn't matter. It's so early in the season. Never mind. Actually, no. Mind. We got it. We have 13 plate appearances of Evan Carter.
Ooh, sample size.
He is 1-for-11 with a .230 on base. 13 plate appearances. Can't say anything from that.
Let the kid run. Let him stay out there and keep hitting versus lefties. Go for it.
Yep.
All right, our buddy Dave Petro's yellow. Bubba's boy, Keaton Wynn. Drafted him in round 30 of 1OC. I just got him for $8 and another. Is he just a stream spot play in OC? Is there maybe something more? Wondering what starting pitching guru Ryan thinks. I say he's a guru because him and I liked all the same starting pitchers in March.
Yeah, we our Merrill Kelly, Justin Steele, just all over those guys.
Hey, guru. Steele's throwing off a mound this week, so we're good.
That's good. Better than what Merrill Kelly's doing.
Yeah, that's for sure. So what's your thoughts?
Sorry, on Keaton? What was the question?
You're the pitching guru. Is Keaton Wynn a streamer spot guy, or is he more of a regular rotation guy?
He's more of a regular rotation guy.
Yeah.
Extreme ground ball guy on a team philosophy of ground balls, as you know, being a Giants guy. They want balls on the ground with the infield that they have with Matt Chapman over at third base. So, yes, 59% ground ball rate for Keaton Wynn. He's not going to – I mean, this is like the Logan Webb blueprint, right? He's not going to miss a ton of bats or get a lot of Ks. Yes, he needs volume for that approach to kind of work, but he throws a ton of strikes, gets a ton of ground balls. I think Keaton Wynn is for real.
Yes, he's very much for real. I actually watched that entire start on Monday night, his six innings at least, and they showed a stat. There's no one in baseball. He's the pitcher that throws the most percentage of splitters per start, close to 47%, which may lead to issues from start to start. Because I was watching him. There's a couple of times where he's kept trying to go low and away, and he'd miss badly with the splitter. But then he'd come back. Like instead of waiting 3-0, 2-0, he just groove a fastball right down Broadway, take the strike, work back in the count. He's a good young pitcher that's not afraid to go at it if he has to. There might be a rough go here and there, but like you said, not a lot of strikeouts, tons of ground balls, similar to Webb, similar to Jordan Hicks, who's not striking guys out but doing the same thing. The Giants' philosophy. Keaton Wynn is definitely for real. It's just a matter for how long this season is he for real, but I think it's going to be for quite a while.
That is crazy on the splitter, 43% of the time. Like that's almost double the usage of his four-seamer. It gets 60% ground balls, and he throws it for strikes, which you don't normally see with a split finger.
He was peppering it low in the zone. It was very impressive to watch. That's cool. It reminded me of like Luis Castillo and his changeup when he's in the low in the zone.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like watching the splitter because it just had this little hook to it and it's freaking popping in the corner like low and away. It made me really happy to watch because I haven't got to like watch a lot of him, and that was impressive to me. So.
And Michael in the chat says, Wynn has a killer slider he doesn't use enough. It gets whiffed, but he only throws it 12% of the time. He barely threw it last year, at least according to the numbers that I have. So that could be actually be a avenue for some strikeout growth if it misses bats like that.
Let him hang out with Webb some more because Webb's like throughout his career, he'll have like spike seasons where he strikes guys out because he starts pitching differently. But I'm telling you, like Webb's a genius. He's back to normal. We talked about that before the show, and having Wynn and Hicks there is a beautiful and. Like I know we joke about Alex Cobb being hurt, and this is probably his homerism in me. Cobb's a good pitcher, a lot of splitters. That's his thing, too. And they kept showing him on the game in between every inning. He sat next to Cobb, and they kept going through his game plan. So, like, he's sitting there, and even though Cobb's not playing, like, he's getting to pick the brain of somebody very, very smart at it. So, a lot of good things coming from that direction. BP at futures_bet. I used some fab this week in an NL-only league and picked up Andy Páez, Jesus Sanchez, and Alexander Canario. Who make the biggest impact and how long can it last? Thanks.
Páez, I think, can make the biggest impact and probably will of those three. I just think the ceiling in that lineup is freaking awesome. So I actually haven't ranked that order. I don't think Canario plays enough to have that much of an impact. And in an only league, I can see the reasoning to bid on him.
Yes,
but I would take Canario after Sanchez and definitely after Páez.
I'm with you. If somehow Canario got regular playing time, I'd have him right next to Páez, honestly. But because that power is legit from Canario, I don't think the playing time's there, so he'll slide behind Sanchez for me. But if something changes, say Bellinger misses time, and they say, sorry, Tauchman, we're going to let the kid play, that gets interesting. Very interesting to me. Nate Curtis just had a nice comment. Perfect topic because, that's what Bloomfield does. That's what Bloomfield does. Perfect topics, perfect boards. That's
Nate's obviously in need of fantasy rehab like
yes,
like me. So
he went straight to the heart when he saw that list. Anthony K says, I'm going to need you to take my guys off this list, Ryan. My league mates are on here and make fun of me enough.
Damn. Good. Well, I'm sure they're getting a kick out of this episode.
The Stringer says, very proud that I only have eight of these players.
That's tough to do, 8 out of 22.
That's pretty good.
Damn.
Aaron K says, I have Torres, Estrada, and Sawinski on my main event team. Of course, he also has Soto, Westberg, Terang, and then Yelich and Suzuki are on the IL who've been crushing beforehand. So, yeah, if that's like five really good players, like you're doing okay.
And again, Estrada's on the way back. 4 weeks in. In another 4 weeks, they could be totally flipped as to who is good and bad. But that 100%. Is funny.
Now, Michael Cicchini, who's been in the chat here, he tweeted us and says, hey, guys, Riley Green knew he was on this board, double dong. He's more worried about his speed, disinterested to run. 402 OBP with zero stolen base attempts. Goldie had 3 Ks today versus Tommy Henry. And he used to be a lefty masher. Like, Goldie was a lefty killer. So that hurts. 34.8% K rate. You think he's cooked. So I think he might be, actually. But it's early to write off. It's too early to write off a talent like Goldie, but yes. What we've seen so far is leaving optimistic. Let's put it that way.
And full agree on Michael's assessment of Riley Green as well, especially with that willingness to not run. And it's interesting that he kind of pointed that out, assuming he sounds like he watches. His parents lives near Detroit, where it's been in the low 40s. So maybe that is a hesitancy to run, given the injuries that Green has had. But we'll see.
And then Rand Simon says, would you keep any of these guys in 12s? Bregman and Goldie probably have too much pedigree to drop, but the rest are all good to drop. I'd probably keep CES too. Also, what about Yoshida? He's an auto drop now that he hardly ever plays. Agree. Cussin, I would not be dropping Yoshida, but
I wouldn't either. I mean, just work ourselves up.
Backwards.
Cuts in 12s. Vaughn's a cut. You cut Rizzo in 12s.
Yep.
Jack's a cut. Palombo's although Michael says in the chat, 100 Babbitt. So that's really bad for Jack Sawinski. That may turn around. But and a 12 Polanco cut.
Yes.
Drury.
Close. If Ahmed Rosario probably would, if he's available, probably go over Drury. Yes.
India?
Not yet. There's still a few things that look okay there, but darn close.
Altman?
Yeah, if you have the right. In a 12, there's probably enough replacement value out there to do it, yes.
Henry Davis is probably the other. Yes,
100%. So, he should be gone.
I think those are your drops, or at least potential drops in 12-teamers.
The other one is Buxton. I don't think you're doing it yet, but we made some interesting conversation with that.
Yeah, I don't think he's that good. I just don't think he's that good. And I think people have the I don't know. I think we think this is the Buxton of younger years, and it's not.
No, it's not. It's not the prospect Buxton that was a 40-40 guy, and this is a prospect Buxton that you're hoping for like 30 home runs and 3 steals and a .235 average. That ain't going to cut it, folks. That ain't going to do it. But all right, Mr. Bloomfield, we're going to wrap it up on this one. Any final thoughts before we head back on Thursday to talk some fab for the week?
Yeah, I'll try and find a more uplifting board
for next
topic
week.
Of conversation.
Let's for talk next about week. Overachievers. Do we believe in them?
Yeah, but then we're going to say, oh, they all suck. They're going to overachieve. They're going to go down.
It's the topic of conversation for this time of year. It's always about panic mode. This is the typical deal.
Yep. And more so in the middle rounds than anywhere else is where you do have those kind of, when you're late rounds, they're easy cuts. If early rounds, you're holding them. And
the proof is anything's possible. Eloy Jimenez had a combo meal. Had a combo meal tonight. His first career stolen base tonight. Yeah. So, and he's hit home runs in 2 out of 3 games. So hey,
let's end on that note. Anything is possible. If Eloy Jimenez can steal a base, you can win your fantasy league.
He's talking about the listeners. I actually beat him twice last year, so he's not talking about me.
Yeah. I'm just kidding. Yeah. If Eloy can steal a base, we can win our fantasy leagues, even without Spencer Strider, Merrill Kelly, and Justin Steele.
Real quick, Adam asks, in a 12, are you okay starting like a Profar Winker over these guys when deciding on a cut?
In a weekly streaming kind of situation, yes.
essentially like in a five outfielder 12 team league, like one of my outfielders almost is a stream every week for the most part. So that's where that would come into play, if something like that, like Ryan's at streaming. All right, we'll wrap it up there. Remember, positive things, Eloy Jimenez, think about that. And we don't hang up. There's no funeral. He actually did something good this time. Check out Ryan on Twitter. Check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm at BD Intrick. Until next time, this is Bubba and the Bloom, episode 128. Catch you all later.